What do you look at this one, the first three or four lines? Now, five outlines of semantics, several words, several terms. Perhaps very indicative, mood, your own experience, you might be in a position to get objective, but that's exactly what I want to put across to you. Of course, the first is probably the self-observation of the project is a body with you. The concept of evidence, I will not analyze the concept of it. There are two different aspects to find out. There are two different aspects to slavery. One is the juridic political, and the second one is the psychological transhumanism. Under the first aspect, slavery is identical with an institution which is based upon a totalitarian concept of private property. When I say totalitarian concept of private property, I mean to say that the latter, private property, the institution of private property, is all inclusive, embracing inanimate and animate things as well as human beings. Okay? So it's aspect of slavery. That's what the totalitarian concept of institution of private life, the science versus the animals. The body of the human slave, of the slave, with all the skills and talents he wants not to be individual himself, but someone else. And the second aspect of slavery, which I call the typological personalistic one, the latter on slavery represents basically a quest after who think, feel, and react, or react in a distinct manner, thus reflecting on the peculiar personality. There is a slave in the juridic political sense. And there is the personality of the slave, which you may find or discover among three people. In short, there are two kinds of self-dom slavery, the juridic political and personalistic. Not always do those these two kinds go hand in hand. When we say that God is the leader of Moshe Kodosh, how do we say about the Bris Moshe? We shall praise thee for the redemption and the freedom of our souls. So I mean, this statement refers to the two kinds of slavery. It's usually political to do a sign. We are set free. Now, this machine is we have liberated ourselves from the Swiss personality. It's a very restrictive personality. And you will be in the future. Now, I have, was well acquainted with these two aspects of violence as well. The political juridic aspect, equal, now a lack of universal analogy to the moment. The master has a given moment, the right, top of the right, and the place. The key moment is top of the right that one individual has concerning another moment. The personalistic aspect is governed by the lack of communication. Certain limitations imposed upon the event because of his strange and peculiar personality. It would be of enormous value to us if we should analyze the specific laws which are inseparably intertwined with the Kenyan issue or with the personality of the slaves. I mean, how many laws would you say we are formulated by the law concerning the Kenyan issue? If we should substitute our term, the personalistic aspects of the slave, how many laws would you say are there? Anyway, how many? Five? I don't know. I haven't found it. I will think that the fundamental teacher, the basic fundamental elements, are basically three anyway. I will not enumerate the three. There are fundamentally three elements which reflect our view of our interpretation of the slave personality. First, our energy believes in the world. Of which the facility has no home. Next, in the level of the list of all commanders, covered from them, which are intermittent, depending upon their period of time, and the time element. Second, an element is in a deep institution, which is in the court, and other is excluded. A matrimony, in other words, in the text of the Torah, does not establish a matrimonial community. Third, is persuaded in his glorified and various witness of testifying in court in both civil and criminal cases. The three elements of two admits as a shared man woman. Second, the absence of species evolution. The third, suliness. The above mentioned words are not just aspects of significance. They are rooted in our theory of the slave personality, or of the slave mind, or the way of the acting and reacting. It's talking lies and it is sources. A slave has been disqualified from testifying in civil or criminal cases. Why? Simply reflecting a straight answer. Why don't you trust the slave? I mean, the slave doesn't know. Why did it happen? Great counselor, a multimillionaire, might be a great industrialist, a great scholar. I'm speaking not of the slave, I'm speaking of the slave personality, which can be discovered amongst women, so-called women. Why is this for? I believe for two reasons. Apparently, the commitment to truth, growing many ethics. The philosophers call it the truth norm, the norm to be truthful, is unknown result. Only the free man experiences the moral pressure of the truth norm. The bondsman, or the serf, is unaware of that. The reason for the insensitive sensitivity of the bondsman all the strength, the truth, is to be found at least at two levels. First, in the fact that the slave is a person without options, who cannot exercise any option. The possibility of choosing between two alternatives has been denied him. There is only one alternative, one cause of action, other. Not two causes of action. After all, in the Vedic describes human being in general, the Jew in particular, so the Vedic speaks of two paths, of two ways, of the alternatives, of two alternatives, the Bracha and the Tlon, Chai and the Anonim. Tov and Ra. I mean, it applies to perhaps the greatness of man, his dignity, his creativity expressed in his freedom of will and his ability to choose any decision with choice between two alternatives, between two courses of action. A slave has no option at all. He has no. He is never confronted with two alternatives. There's no course of action, is not in the possibility of choosing between two alternatives is being denied. He needs no decision. Someone else doesn't come. He has no faith in himself. He is psychologically unable to cope with this situation. He is unable to seize the initiative. He lacks the urge, the drive to do things. And since he has no, he's not confronted with two alternatives. And he makes no decision. He has no freedom of choice. And he cannot intervene in certain situations in order to improve his lot. Or to better himself. He lacks the initiative, since we are in, he lacks the tools. Which he would employ if the opportunity were given to him to intervene and to help himself. So he is inclined, therefore, he is inclined to see things the way they see things, not the way they are. It is quite normal in psychology that people who are not free, not slaves, people imprisoned. Or not happening in the concentration camps, or people whose opportunities are restricted and limited, develop a certain, develop illusion. Their approach to reality is more an imaginative one, not a realistic one. They see, they experience things, not the way the things are in reality, but the way they want the things to be. The way they would like the world somehow to be. Since he cannot intervene and change situations, the whole world is viewed from a personal subjective slanted angle. So usually you find it not only in regard to slaves, without any person with handicap. A cripple, and or any other impediment in which a person is confronted. It might result in a certain sense of unreality, and somehow slanting the interpretation and his viewing of reality in order to suit or to please is ego. This is number one of my theory did not control the energies of human beings. This is the testimony of the observation power of the energies that are subjective. The energy also leads in fear, that was, the energy leads in fear. But it's funny. He's afraid not only of those who are stronger than he, or those who may avenge themselves on him, or those who have jurisdiction over him. He is afraid even of people who cannot inflict on him. He is afraid to contradict people. Even though such people absolutely have no control. And contradiction in his part would not result in any harm to him. So Antigonus is not only his master, but a stranger who has no jurisdiction over him. The fear is unjustified. But unjustified fear is the motivating force in his life. And actually, the fear of the slave, many inmates, extermination and concentration camps in Europe told me, they were afraid to contradict anyone. Not only, the supervisor of the slave, contradict camp, but anyone, even a child. The child had come to them and told them that anytime, at 12 o'clock midnight, he would agree with them. The fear was instilled in them. And their natural reaction is then insight or then statement was to agree. Don't they matter? We find the scriptures in our own principles. Such fear, it's an erratic fear. It's unjustified fear, it's not either. It was described so beautifully by the Bible. Ubadim wa irele sagia. Nasa wa daishen wa korashom ni brothers. Nishin yin ilayim di gavi nefesh. Moyu hayecha tuin wa kuneget and tochad tolim wa molayla wa nisam in gehaya. The fear of the Lord is quite a real fear. But imaginary fear. Phobia. Which has no foundation in reality. Then the reaction of the person to any experience, any event, any situation is one of fear. Even the situation is not better than the kind of fear and his phobia. In a word, the habit is not trustworthy because it substitutes imagination, fantasy, for that, not only for that reason, but not expounded before, but for another reason as well. It's motivated by unjustified, unconscious fear. And it is meant to contradict. And any testimony given before all, before passing, to bear witness means to contradict and to antagonize somebody. In general, if you want to tell the truth, you have to antagonize somebody or someone. And if you are afraid to antagonize, you're striving to contradict anyone, such a person is destroyed from giving testimony. In a word, we have already the first characteristic of the body. He is a frightened being. Such a person is not trustworthy. And the pressure of fright is only why God tells us this. His thoughts, his person cannot be objective, his power of observation is determined not by logic, but by his emotions, by his imagination, by his fantasy, and secondly, is his hunted being, is his scared being. His scared being is his fight. His free being is a courageous being. He can face the reality of him and describe reality objectively, whether he puts him or doesn't, whether he's confronted with disaster. Is a friendly environment, makes no difference. He stands up and he does it with, and he has the power of affirmation and the courage to say or to state what he observes. The slave has the power of affirmation, nor has the courage to state that because the slave has done it. But if there is no, my opinion, 光飞呢？还飞过，还飞过，还飞过。 Now, the second letter, the second place. The second letter is a letter in the wings of Mustafa Shah. Intermittent commandments which depend upon time. Why? Because simply, the event next, the time next to it. Let me explain. Adam, everything under the sun, in the universe, that exists in time. Time and space are the two frames of reference to which anything in existence is related. All evolutionary processes in nature are the result of standards. However, while everything exists in time, particularly the organic world, the inorganic world also exists in time, and time leaves its impact upon the inorganic world. The organic world is actually intertwined with time. It is integrated into the passage of time, because the main, I would say, characteristic of the organic world is birth, not only of man, not only of any organic tissue, is birth, life, and death, basically. Life of any organic thing, any organic tissue, is just the slow approach of death. And of course, and life, birth, life, and death are phenomena and experiences which can only be understood is placed within the same aspect of time. But however, while everything exists in time, not everything experiences time. Now, speaking about the animate or inanimate world, and speaking about the intelligent world, the only one who experiences time, who is capable, I don't say who experiences, who is capable of experiencing time, or not living in time, but living to live time, to feel time, but experiencing time, endowed man with the time awareness of sensing, feeling, or experiencing time as the existential stream of selfhood, is the human being the only one. Unfortunately, not every human being takes advantage of this unique human dance to experience time, to live time, not to live in time. One may live in time and not experience time. Many human beings are in time. They float with the tide of time because there is no alternative. Whether one stage or not, I mean, it does change. But it's inevitable. It flows with the tide of time, for the latter is all powerful and irresistible force. Yet, they have denied themselves the exciting experience of time. It's an exciting, it's a great experience of time. What does this awareness or experience of time consists of? What are the component parts of the time experience? Not aging, even the tree ages. Even the animal, the brute, and the beast in the field age without experiencing time. They age involuntarily. But what does time experience mean? I believe that when I speak of time experience, that there are three basic component parts in the time experience. All of the other things that component parts, three acts of experiencing time. First, retrospection. There is no time without retrospection. By retrospection, you know that the meaning of what is, but I mean by retrospection, re-experiencing young man would be difficult. An old man is very easy. We are experiencing the past, all the beautiful memory, Chinese memory. Without memory, there is no time. Number one, number two, the time experience consists in exploration or prospection, of things yet unborn, of events not yet in existence, that means exploration of the future, or the anticipatory experience of the world, or of time, or of events which are not yet real. They are still unreal. This is the second component part, the second part. The third part is appreciation of valuation at the present moment is the most precious possession one has. It's an axiological axiom. The time is the most precious possession one possesses. Particularly for young boys, we have to start. Let me just explain. No one is worthy of time awareness, its retrospection imminently. He is incapable of removing, recovering, and reproducing past experiences. What is, for instance, you are about a few days before paper? What is the actual situation of the time? No interest of situation in time. So not exhausted from in detail, in story, of Bible, of things and events which were once upon a real, once upon a time, and have vanished completely. It's not true. It is more than that. The drama, charged with emotion and tenseness, the difficult crisis of Bible and totality is removing, re-experiencing the past. In short, no time awareness is imaginable, is the lateral next, the historical experience. Basically, that perspective is the historical experience. This is history. If there are past events which are not re-experienced, then we don't belong to history, we belong into archaeology. This is the difference between archaeology and history. Archaeology of past events, which were prepared once upon a time, disappeared, and they may be reproduced by memory, yes, but are not alive, are not real still. So no retrospection of the unfaith, or very, very old things in the memory. But history is not just recorded stories, or events which we have to witness to writing, it's more than that. It is a part of the time awareness of a people, of an individual, of a nation, of a group. And see, and if history is a part of the time awareness of a group, then that it's not just recorded, not just a tale, it's a drama which is relived and restaged and reenacted. So memory is not just a storehouse for many latent impressions, but is that song of the living memory, which reproduces, not only reproduces, but we experience it and we live. In short, what time awareness is imaginable is the latter lex, the historical experience. Take for instance American Jews. What was the tragedy of American Jews in the last two generations? One generation know very well. What do you want? American Jews who came here, and we forgot this part. But many people forgot this part, not that they forgot the Jews' stories. So anybody about this little power and about the military peasants who used to come to town and sell their merchandise. You remember that? But this stream of historical consciousness in which we all flowed, this time vista, a perfection through which we re-experience time, we relive time, and time becomes part, an integral part of my own eye awareness, of my own self-good consciousness, then the past is a part of me. The way you have it is stronger. Relativity is not a fear. We lived so many hundreds of years ago, 1800 years ago, 1850 years ago, but it's a part of my awareness, this image, this thinking. It has been integrated into my personality. And I think of a material, of a real, of a mature. And remember, I don't think about people who live in antiquity or middle ages, but people who are alive. And somehow the images have become part and parcel of my own eye awareness. This time, American Jews have forfeited the great eye awareness self-perception. You are Jews without a power. I used to meet many young men who simply did not know the name of their grandfather. Oh, he died in Oxford. These days, and the family come from your background. One father came over in 1905, 1910. He said, "Your grandfather, I forgot his name. What's an old man?" Of course. And so finally, actually, I mean, the eye awareness begins, how would I say, with his death. And here there was no human being. Human being cannot, the world cannot begin, cannot commence with his. The human being, the world of human being does not commence with the birth of the human being. The human being is born into the world. It flows with the endless stream of God. But the human being is not born into the world, but the world is born with him. But then, his humanity, like I said, is incomplete. On the other hand, to live in time, to feel the rhythm of time, one must also must move from memory of the past to the unreality of the future. He must move from things and events which were and aren't anymore to our things and events that will be real someday, even though they are not yet real, from reminiscing to anticipating, from images reproduced by memory to visions produced and beheld by his imagination. In a word, to live in time means to be committed to a great past and to an unknown future. Because the time awareness contains the element, an immortal element, responsibility for emerging events. And actually, anticipation involves also intervention of men in the historical practice, in historical situations. Men should, according to others, try to know, should know and fashion the future. Exactly why it was being created three, as the three ages, not only to lead racial decisions marginal decisions. There's no need for freedom. It's just marginal decisions are at stake. It's free to reach central, basic decisions, which will determine his and sometimes the world's future. There is no time awareness without long commitment to intervene when intervention is called for. that is the reason that the Agrabah, which commences with an ancient past, very ancient, with the dawn of our history, Agrabah concludes with a eschatological vision of a redeemed creation that will be Nishmat society by operation. Because you cannot relieve them unless together with the experiencing at the end, you also relieve the past and the future. However, in order to connect retrospection with anticipation, memory with expectation, the hand view with the foresight is foresight. One must cherish the present, fleeting moment, as if it represented eternity. Let us think. Yahweh says it's very sensitive, I would say, approach to the present, to time. Each minute is valuable. Each second is precious. See the infinitesimal particle of time is the link between the Eon Babylon, between the past eternity and future eternity. In a fraction of a second, one may realize or destroy hopes, visions, expectations. That's why the Halakha is so time conscious, very time conscious. The Halakha time, the present moment, the fraction of time, 20 moments more. Sometimes we think it brought us almost on that chair, but it didn't. 20. One is permitted to do work on a Friday afternoon, just 1 minute before sunset. Oh, I don't need to speak to Shabbat, but I mean, from the viewpoint of Shabbat itself, is one is permitted to do it, which is fine, if he's watched. Precise and exact, and he's sure that just 1 minute before sunset, he's permitted to do work. But if this, but he's enjoying something, 2 minutes later, and if he engages in any way, 2 or 1 minute later, he's bound to bring a national power. Because he can work at a national. So he asked, what's the difference? Does 1 minute make so much difference? Does one fraction of a second is worthwhile to involve a person in sin? Or yes, I mean, a split second makes a great deal of difference as far as the aspirants are concerned, fly to the moon or fly from the moon. It's like an indecision, you know, may end in catastrophe, in disaster. So apparently it's not only malefic people. This is the scientific approach as well. The detail count and the fraction of time is important. One reach mark, this one. At 9:05, I'm just as the time is just out, right? And fulfill the mitzvah, right? 6 minutes after 9:06, his performance is worth it. What did he need? Just a few minutes. 1 minute. Why should the same disciple? The same disciple. The same commitment. The same dedication. On the contrary, this experience is more intense and more enhanced because it is a little better, a little later. But it's not a hard, it's not a sleepy. And yet, Akira the Kamehameh, we used to call Akira the Kamehameh. The means of Krishna is not fulfilled. Not a clue. Nisho. He was a person and he's of course. He depends upon the fraction of a second, upon his 3 seconds. the fourth plan. There's another. You want to know the story as actual story, and you fail to fulfill, to implement the instructions to do the thing by the prophet Samuel. I mean, concerning Amalek. And then he came back, and Saul asked for forgiveness. He said, Gaddafi, your back is clear, he shares his people. So his story was rejected. Forgiveness and absolution was not given to him. And Shimon said, call out the shares and Allah. And someone in the Akhlaq area, God has taken away the patience and the
and most of the songs they borrow
这报道你将来我们最好The most, I would say, frustrating problem for them is stomach. What can they do with their time? They have too much time on their hands. Tell me the Chachorim don't have this question. It's all right, it's all very vital to study Torah and to know Torah. It's always important. But even when a person is young, in the middle of years of ascent, it's also important. You talk about to him, you arrive and it extends his world view and reveals the new dimensions of existence. What I'm trying here is to formulate the world view of, I mean, the philosophy of freedom and absence, the way it expresses itself in our life. But the one is young, it's also important. But when a man reaches old age, but it's a tiny thing. The Talmud Chacham is not half. The Talmud Chacham is intellectual interest. He takes the Gemara and the whole problem of kindness. I know all that. Talmud Chacham, we don't have to talk to the problem of old age. We know it's a new branch in psychiatry, how to deal with old people, afraid of death, and how things frustrated. Particularly, they are saying they are not needed anymore. No one wants them. They cannot contribute. The man who thinks that he cannot contribute anymore to society, and no one wants them, and no one is concerned with them or about them, of course, is in a terrible, finds himself in a terrible situation. So life becomes motionless. Motionless life is meaningless, absurd. Is an absurd one. To the slave, life is emotionless affair. And he makes some drink out of shirt, he used to tell me. The regular day, the emotion of time came to stop. Time became some horrible, weird, uncanny. Monstrosity. The river was not floating with the tide of time, moving with the clock. It was everything came to stand still, to rest, and it's exactly what it's like. Zohar HaShemesh, Yubar HaShemesh, is actually expressing something emotion. Be it physical motion, be it intellectual motion, be it actually, I mean, spiritual motion, in activity, in feverish activity, in trying to do things, in trying to accomplish, in finish to accomplish, and try it again. However, the slave, there are many, when I speak of the slave, I don't mean the slave in the form of them. Now, men have this big personality. It's emotionless affair. Life is addressed at its tempting. What you failed to do yesterday can be made up today. And if you neglect your assignments for today, you still have time to work. Some students might have this coming up. The most adaptive is so happy. The last time is weak personal. You went with the great excitement this way. The great excitement. As opportunities knocking on the door, as challenges summoning men to action, a feverish activity, a hasty word, and tense expectations. And fear of failure. Never fail this way. He never succeeds. Enough. Any mistake which is inseparably bound up this time is inapplicable. The Ben Chaim is a time, the Freeman is a time experiencing pain, being, moving to this time, looking forward, while not forgetting the past. In short, his time experience is a three-dimensional, while the ever is familiar with the flat presence, not with the depth of the future. No wonder that the first course of our cases, first comes, was saying, linked up with the recital of Kish. What is Kish? What is Kish? I mean, I believe the whole philosophy of time found expression in the plain text of Kish. What is Kish? If you read, for instance, if you try to tell the big contention to not time, do I study it? And what is time? Time is something empty. Just a form, which is no matter. It's a coordinate system. What is time in physics? A coordinate system. Space and hour. Time in physics is quantified time. It is time measured by things on the board. It's not pure time. It's not real time. Real time cannot be quantified. The real time is pure progress. So, I mean, to speak is just a coordinate system to which certain events, I mean, are related for the purpose of measurement. I mean, so how can you speak of Kedusha Sayyar, the sanctity of time, sanctity, what is it? A non-existent magnitude? If you speak of Kedusha Sayyar, it means life to ask time is a living entity. It's a dynamic force. It is something which is endowed with creativity and dynamic and meaning. And you sanctify it. Not only you sanctify time, that many regular holiday festival is called, is actually in the legal of the Hebrew verse, is the Zumani, time. Time is a progressive entity, charged with counting, meaning, and sense. That's why the first sign of the Hebrew, the first, and the Hebrew raising the banner of freedom, so I call the banner of written just four letters. Time. Everything, you know anything about time. I know the question in your mind. Am I guessing right or wrong? Huh? Yes, correct. So the difference between every initial in the garden that they shall move on. Such a question should be taken care of. What happened? My father knew at the time. And there's a difference, a distinct difference between every initial vis-a-vis of they shall move on, the relationship. And this shows the way, even though I use the term for every well, move on. And he's showing the need for that. But if she does need that, if she performs it, it means and that. And yet, it's not on the need, he is experienced. Don't ask him any questions on the papers, with reference to papers of the Congress. Because the issue of the need, well, she is in time, she experiences time. That's why when she fulfills the mitzvah, so the act is as meaningful as that of the male. The Rabbi Natan says that the halacha is accepted, that a mishnah recites a prophet before the performance of mitzvah and shalom. It means that in mitzvah, the act is as meaningful as that of man. But another is a spiritual. But you have another many. He said to the Akbare, he still all star in faith, he's a matter of the Akbare, before you start the whole Akbare, so the host, the head of the house says, the being of matter of the son of the Akbare, the son. The forefathers have departed from Egypt to the Akbare. Why is it important? To say, according to the Ram, the purpose of the being, not to have the son, it's someone in the Ram. Is there someone in the Ram of death? Oh, I want you to check. Isn't it? Master of Shaheed Ramzan, he starts the recital of that God of the second half. The year, the being, your son of the Messiah, the purpose of your son. Why is it necessary? Is it simple? Does it make much difference when the Jews depart from Egypt in a hurry, or slowly, sedately? And the reporting, you know, the report plays a tremendous role in the halacha, the whole problem, whether the Pesach must be consumed before midnight, or you may consume the Pesach, and the material born depends upon what the semantics of the reporting. Supposing the Israel, supposing the Mitzrayim. Where is the important? That the Rambam apparently, the word supposing for the Rambam became the motto, the slogan and the symbol of the great king, like you see at Mitzrayim of Exodus. Why?
Well,
the supposing will stand in touch. Sorry for the niece. It can happen now, it will not happen the next time. The feverish activity. The excitement that hurry of trying to catch up, why catch up? Because they missed something. They attempt to cover some distance. Yes. Moving, rushing, surging forward. The high velocity. That only expresses the time consciousness. Meaning time, not quantified time, not flat time. Not time and physics, not time. Yeah. It is the living time. Think that time. That was, I mean, actually, the shibboleth of the people of our ancestors. When they left the fire, the view, your son on the fire. We have regained the consciousness of time. Hence, we are free. Now, the test. A Levi cannot effectuate the knowledge. What? Why? The Hadith apparently considers marriage not only as a sociological institution, but also as a metaphysical existential community. This is not only an economic social partnership between two individuals who, like the biological symbiosis, are dissimilar, but still get together, get along, because of mutual benefits to both, but not only as a social institution, utilitarian, pragmatic social institution, partnership, but as a personalistic union. To marry means to tear down the barriers which separate individuals from each other. To step out of the shelter of egocentricity and self-concern into the bright spaces of a joint existential experience. Marriage is supposed to precipitate the transition from an individual to a communal modus existentiae, from a singular to a together existence. There are people who are incapable of undergoing this existential metaphysical change. They cannot shatter the walls of Jericho surrounding them. we always remain in existential depletion, in isolation, in metaphysical aloneness. They are not able to share basic personalistic experience and assume ultimate commitment to someone who is not evil. Interestingly, the following observation. You know very well, you all know, because you go so frequently to weddings. There are two benedictions concerning the creation of men among the seven beautiful families of the world. One benediction is the short of the Torah, Manusha tradition of King Abraham did the order. The second benediction is a long one. Amensis is brother can conclude this brother. Manusha tradition of King Abraham. But what is strange is the fact that in the first prophet, when she says Yitzhak Adam, no reference is made to Eve. Yitzhak Adam. But Eve is not mentioned, the woman is not mentioned. And only in the sacrament in which the divine nature of man is expressed, the first prophet does not emphasize the nature of man's character, his relatedness to God, to his own. The second prophet, already, we have two new elements. First, Eve appeals, the woman is introduced, this skin of the man is being done on the earth. And secondly, human nature is described. Man was created in the image of God, in the likeness of his maker. Now, the answer is simple. The first prophet deals with mundane man, mundane, natural man, with the human being as a natural. Let me state that unequivocally that I'm not referring to the primitive man, to the beast of the forest, or of the king. I'm even referring to civilizers, to mothers, to westerners, to men engineers, men mathematicians, men physicists, men doctors, men who is very creative and climbs to the moon. However, man cannot transcend himself. He cannot say, see, beyond himself. He cannot simply exceed and transcend his natural boundaries, his biological pressures and instinctual drive. He's completely imprisoned to himself. But in his opinion, there is nothing beyond nature. So he's a prisoner of his own imagination, or his own output, and Weltanschauung. Such a person can never form the ideal covenantal community that matrimony is. He can enter a marriage, contract for convenience sake, yes. For utilitarian pragmatic reasons, like the cases in the biological symbiosis. However, he is unable to bring about an existential community. And that benediction, the matrimony or the matrimonial community, is called the union of the earth. Only the person created in God's image, people who transcend themselves, who are capable to think in terms of others, an existence above and beyond their natural one, are able to perform the forward movement to search toward another person, extend their themselves, and create a covenant of community. The evidence of lust, torture, insecure, without dignity, in terms of pride. Again, I'm not speaking only about the women. We are, I'm speaking about women as well. Scared and insecure, and incapable to think in terms of sympathy, love, compassion. Again, I was told by inmates of the extermination camps. They are actually the whole experience of love for brothers, sisters, friends, relatives. The whole feeling of friendship and commitment, I mean, which are so basic in interhuman relations, which we change so much, that this disappeared during their stay in the camps. Because they were not sure, I mean, at next minute, of what will happen next hour, really. Being always frightened, always scared, always alarmed, always terrible, they must have been. But just being, with the exception of moments of self-revelation. He's frightened for his life, ready to flee, and the steady terror and fright extinguish everything noble and altruistic in a person. He cannot give himself that out. He has no faith in them. Everybody is his enemy. He protects himself. He cannot think of others or be concerned to meet them or harm them. He's a failing, meaning a person who can live in community, share destiny, and merge experiences in time. It's interesting that a symbol of blue in the area is called the Pesach. And called the Pesach is a very strange form of belief. It is distinct from all other forms. The concept of Chabura community is completely non-existent. Pertaining to other Kabbalists, Shlomim, Hatha, Seyol, Tidor, Asham Lodi, Asher, there's no concept of Chabur. An individual can bring it all. So, on the contrary, some Kabbalists cannot be offered by two people, by partner, only by one. And Pesach has been linked up by the theory, this Chabur, shall be so, and so abide, to such an extent, that one man don't have one talent, is of the opinion that I joined in a major professor. One individual cannot offer the best to man. Only two people, three people, four people, five people, 10 people, 15 people, but not one. Why? Why is special difference? And all other sacrifices. You know what the answer is? Because Pesach is a symbol of fairness. Pesach is consumed by Habura in community. You work of Habura, Shrini, Atar, Leva. The path to M is the day they call the path to M, sell the sobi, sell a vice, in land for the household. Because in the form of Hebrews expresses itself in the awareness of bias, of community, of being together. Bias is a new category which was revealed to the Jews, the dawning of freedom. Now we have arrived at the definition of Teresa as a typological category, and vice versa, as the definition of the theory. So what is it? Everything is applied, personality, living in time, without experiencing the movement of time, who is imprisoned to be himself, not being able to share with the special experience of the world. If you want to know the definition of the theory will just reverse the term. Right? And what am I doing with the interpreter? Yeah. Let's just move on. The parallel is right. Right? The parallel is right. In the beginning, he said, and what am I doing with the right? What is the time? What is the emphasis? Does it make any difference whether we are going to tie or to someone else? What is he? He's slave. But who the master is, I'm a factory that makes wood.
Right.
But apparently, three forms, because that body is emphasizing. There are two kinds of slavery. Not kind, but two relationships between master and slave. Sometimes the slave is owned by an individual. And sometimes the slave is the property of the state. I mean, in history, you know, I mean, for instance, modern slavery is owned by the individual. In this society, it was an individual property. The slave was individual property. The same as it was in the United States, before the abolition of emancipation. Slaves were the individual property of the master. If I was detected by a slave. However, you take, I mean, the rich slavery in Russia, I mean, the power from Brezhnev, but there is slavery in Russia, there's no doubt about it. The slaves are not owned by individuals, because individual private property has been abandoned to Russia. So the slaves are owned by the states. The same is true with China. The same was true of Nazi Germany. The concentration camps were not owned by the individuals, but the property of the states. So what we're emphasizing is, and we exactly know historically that the slaves, usually, I mean, the main soil, were not slaves as individuals. As I say, the way our body was running, the interest of it. The way our body was eating the time, the time, the way our body was running, our body was eating the time, our body was loved the time. Where has also concerned with this problem, whether we were slaves, were owned by parents of people, by palace officials, or by individuals, by the aristocracy of Egypt, by the police, and the officers of the army, or by the state itself. Apparently that is important. What's the difference between being owned by a state or being owned by an individual? Of course, both forms of bondage are degrading, no doubt about it. However, there is a distinction between private and public serfdom of bondage. While at an individual level, some personal relationship between master and slave may develop. They develop. The slave may attain a position of power in the master's household. He may de facto run the household, becomes the master himself. The best example is Yates. Yates stayed in Potiphar's home, and his master's relationship, Potiphar's relationship to Yates, there was confidence, there was complete trust, and he had to stay away. He had Yates. However, if the slave is the property of the state, of his soul, merciless, cruel, corporate state, then your personal relationship is magical. You never know. Faith is a squirrel, or the supervisor, or the next thing, or the settling, or a squirrel, or even on the Tuesday as they were on the first day. No friendship, no sympathy will ever be around. No personal contact. The best case is, when they were studying, is simply prison. It's very seldom that a relationship, an intimate relationship, happens in all the time of life. But it's very seldom, it's very rare, that is a real, personal, intimate relationship developed between the world and the world. That's all. Sometimes, usually, the slaves of the state lose their identity, they become numbers, inmates are felt, and no matter how long a prisoner spans, stays in jail, he is as new to the world as he was on the first day. The same impersonal, indifferent, cruel relationship. The life of a serf owned by the government ranks of these slaves in the concentration camps in Germany or in the Siberian mines in Russia is just torture and unbearable preservation. There is not a single spark of humanity in that institution. And that's what he emphasized. A body means a broken body, the paradigm for him. Basically, Egypt was a corporate state, and the reminiscence in many respects of modern Russia. Very efficient technologically, force instead of technology. Technology was substituted by magic, it was more magical society than technological society. But you know, even from a realistic viewpoint of me, an accomplishment technologically, great deal, even with the pyramids, that's the head of the state, was terror. Terror was not individuality either. Terror has who is terror? And those terror in the times of Abraham, he had no individual life. No individual life. So even his personality of the king was erased. He was just a German soul, like a soldier, leveled up. Or uniqueness of physiology, leveled up, standardized. It's very typical of the corporate state. What do we use our time? Which terror was it? Yes, we got different with the, you know, whole life. Is there a difference between Gresham and Christian? I don't believe all family members are. Really, they lose all of place. They lose the individual place of their personality. When they leave their speaking, the leader speaking, they take out. The same style, the same vocabulary, the same phrases, the same idiom, the same technique. I wouldn't say I'm from the United States, so they didn't do pyramid exploiter and so forth and so on, but the message I would disagree with them, the message in the line, it is the same language, the same terminology, the same phraseology, which I remember from the days of the Russian Revolution, the same with the young boy, which I come across now. Because in the corporate space, in a society which is based on slavery, and Russia is a slave society, no matter the slogan they take advantage of. I mean, it's a slave society. A person cannot strike, a person cannot simply leave his job. He's assigned a job and say he must do the job. He has no right to strike, he has no right to take time out, to be punished, and so forth. So, I mean, it's slavery. If the wages are determined by the master and not by the employer, not by the employee. In a slave society, individuality submerges. And somehow a fish, instead of the heterogeneous, powerful, motley crowd of a free society, you are suddenly confronted with a peaceful crowd of slaves. I thought it was in the society. Very spacious and very consistent. And the relationship is impersonal. And of course, the impersonal relationship is a true relationship. Not a true love. By saying you are the Shem and the King of the Shem. Don't be afraid, I would not interrupt the holiday. I mean, if you need you, I would say it would be worthwhile, but not for one night. The job not to be done in one night. But in our bodies, I always say, the word that mentioned later, the word people suffer, the verb suffer in Hebrew. Appears in Chumash, in the objective case, by Sapir or Eved or Yitzchak, Esad Rogamayim, in the accusative or objective case, S, retolding this story, related to him the tale, but when it comes, or the monkey Sapir was the Bicho, Ben Bicho, and Skor Asher is allowed to be Mitzrayim. Again, the objective case. And when it comes to people, he fears the trying, finding the objective case, and he should disappear, It's a piece of material. And the other piece replaces the objective case. They suffer beastly as they try. Not they suffer empty as they try, people as they try, but they suffer beastly as they try. Affirmative case and an extra sense. Apparently the transitive verb, I mean grammatically the affirmative case makes no sense. If the verb is a transitive one, then why should the affirmative case be used? When I put a prayer, it's completely unnecessary. By something you added, you throw the skull at one another, you find many. You can't cut across many times. You can't cut across the verb suffer. You start with the accusative case, the objective case. Why suffer is the opposite of me? Because people will see us in trying is not, as I always say, is not just a tale, it's a study. It's an exploration, it's an investigation. It is removed. And the suffering is that connect, I mean, in the objective case, means to tell a tale. The suffering in the adjective case means to study, to understand, to penetrate, to comprehend, to analyze. That's why I say, it would be no harm if I would, I read that my shoe is. That God assigned me. It will take me a year to complete my job in your project. By praying you are the shame of the king in the shop. Why did the Torah use the possessive noun in addition to the Shem Abaya, to the tetragrammaton? They said that he's saying, well, the Shem is up. Why are they? Why is this up? Are you saying? By him, sure. It's very explicit and very clear who the Redeemer was and who took us out of it. But it's a qualification. Are you saying, well, the Shem? Why? No, who? Are you saying? Why is this up? So after the sense that he's saying, well, the Shem is up. What purpose was the king of our God in his service? Now let's go in order to find the answer to this problem, to this question, we must understand the semantics of the king. What is the semantics of the king? What is the meaning of the king? Semantics are the phrase of the shem of the king. But what does it mean? Abaya the king or Abaya the king? The semantics of the phrase of the Shem of the king express the idea that Abaya has been accepted as our God, as our master, our lawgiver, our king, and our ruler, to whom we are committed. By whose will we have to part, and whom we are obedient, and whose laws and demands we are supposed to be about. So what does it mean? In other words, the Kriyas Mitzrayim is the point of itself. By Mitzrayim you are the Shemeshah, what I mean, we would say, God Almighty has taken us out of Egypt. And here's the relationship. Between Jew and Abaye, terminate. That's all. God has mercy upon us. Yes. He does not tolerate injustice and iniquity. And we're praising, we ask our voice, the Ishmael and Shemesh Tolenu. And he took us out. God intervenes in processes of nature. God intervenes in history and society. And many a time, he saves the persecuted. And he protects him, I mean, against his persecutor, against the tyrant, against the slave, against the master. But he intervenes once, and then he creates his transcendence, and the relationship. I want to add just one thing. The question of freedom. Was it you? do repairs and not roofless. I mean, a lot of the question. Is a Jew who observes Tanyag Mitzvahs a committed Jew, a free person or not? Of course, he's a free person. Apparently, we understand freedom at a different level than many people do. When we say we have to things, we are speaking out of the house of bondage and granted us freedom, but the freedom apparently now, in our opinion, consists in serving God, in abiding by His will, in conforming to His wishes. It's very strange. God created man as a free being. However, at the same time, He gave him a moral and commanded him to abide by it. In other words, God endowed man with the most cherished of all gifts, freedom, and willed man, to lose that precious freedom and submit himself to him, to the moral law. And some have the shape of our Adam. That is strange. The first encounter between man and God, the other mission God, was the instructions given to him. Apparently, a man who is not bound by any code, who is not subordinated to God, who doesn't surrender to him, has not achieved complete humanity. Humanity man is completed and perfected by accepting the instructions of God. It means that man is free, is confronted with God, and his task is to give up his freedom. By giving up his freedom, he finds it, but at a higher level. Fundamentally man is not a free being. Never mind all the slogans and all the theories about freedom. Man is not a free being. I've never seen a free being. At the physiological level, man is a confronted being. We should ask him, who is man? What is man? How does his humanity express itself? In what sense is it different from the animal machine? From the beast, the forest? I'll tell you, all creatures are not confronted with him. Man is a confronted being. He is an opposed being, he is a challenged being. He is a prisoner of the natural law and the social institutions. Man is not free because he is insecure. Disaster may strike at any moment. You can never know whether disaster will or not strike the next second. He is subject to 101 restrictive measures, some due to his being a natural creature, some are a result of his social integration. As a matter of fact, the more powerful the person is, the more restricted he is. If you ask me who has little freedom, I'll tell you the President of the United States. Well, I believe there are some families more to prisoner than he is, it is the ruler of the family. Whoever he is, measure of power. Man is a social animal, and he cares for public opinion. What does man do? Anything, he sacrifices life in order to win favor in the eyes of the public. The craze of the public calls, or to call public opinion about the bad in Indonesia. The public likes him or doesn't like him. Now about the phobia. Hence, even those who are legally free men, those who are not slaves, are in bondage to nature, to society, to hundred of restrictive phobia, superstitions and prejudices, morals and customs. There is nothing in that. Only, there's only one way how man can free himself from all restrictions, from all his fears, from all his phobias, from all his, I mean, tribes. There's only one way. By surrender to God. Surrender to God frees man from his serfdom, to his sovereign nature. I mean, say for instance, in antiquity, man was afraid of one disease. That was leprosy. It was right. This scepter of leprosy haunted man in a desert. This was the incurable disease. Modern man has not won freedom from such a fraud. It's not leprosy now, it's cancer. How many people are simply insane? Because of doubt in their minds, because of the fright, perhaps they'll develop malignancy. We call Mother Nature, he's not free. Because as I said before, free is only the person who is not frightened. The frightened person cannot be free. Terror, fright is the worst prison. Means captivity from there. How can men get rid of this fright? There's only one way. If you surrender to God. If there is faith in God and surrender to Him, it's a great fright, of course. You have to be afraid of God too. You have to fear God. But you know very well that the great fright, because frees men from evil God, from evil fright. And that's why to surrender to God does not mean to give up my freedom. I just give up my freedom for one short while, for a few seconds. It's very hard. The biological pressures, I mean, push me. I mean, and nature, the color of blood, summons action. And it happens that a particular action is being prohibited by the law, be it in the realm of dietary law, be it in the realm of sexuality, is being prohibited. All men have to do is to exert his ability to give up for a few seconds. In the next hour or 5 minutes, at a high level, exalted in the hands, and he will be more of a free man than he was. Thereby Yitzhayu, of Hashem in Israel, is fully being taken out of Egypt, without an agreement, without accepting his call, without surrendering to his authority, without reaching the covenant to him, without obligating ourselves to surrender to them in order to gain a higher form of freedom, then we will be in bondage again. Bondage to whom? To nature, to our own fears, to our own phobias, to society, to struggles. Not only because the Redeemer was not just us, but an occasion. That's why we are something personal. Personal is a personal. Now let's, tomorrow, Biyot Chazoko Ugezrei Anitula. With a strong hand and outstretched arms. Of course, you know very well, the Jewish ethics, Jewish morality, is based upon one foundation. What's the foundation? Run after the rock. Limitate and carry the difficult term to be used, but for the sake of the work of another term, we call it imitate, run. This is often an expression, being done with him. We have to imitate his ways, his actions. Since in the touch of him is the very foundation of our ethic. So if Akadosh Baruch Hu used Yot HaZoko, who's Rehan Etuyot, we are also supposed to use it from time to time. when in times of crisis or in times of distress, or whenever the call comes through to stand up and to defend a certain position. What does it mean, your chazakon? What do the terms your chazakon really do mean as far as Jewish morality is concerned, as far as human beings are concerned? What are we supposed to do, and how are we supposed to execute our plans if we are called upon to intervene in this type of situation and react? Of course, Yod Chazoko, please listen. Yod Chazoko and Dreya Netuyo mean two things. Effectiveness, effective action. You see Yod Chazoko? Dreya Netuyo, what does it mean when you see Dreya Netuyo? What is Dreya Netuyo? How the people of the Yod Netuyo are in Yerushalayim? What does it mean? It means vigilance, watchfulness, alertness, being ready, being prepared. And actually, what comes to expression is the idea that man is a responsible being. Responsibility is a part of his divine endowment. Yet, and that Yahadis has taught us time and again, his responsibility is not limited to his own actions. Oh, he's therefore responsible for his own actions. To his own individual behavior, man is charged with historical responsibility. If you want, you can use the phrase, of course, when I hate him. But if you man was called upon, as I said before, to shape history, to be historically involved, to direct historical unfolding, to our worthwhile objectives. We know in the halacha there are two groups of mitzvot, mitzvot atzibur and mitzvot shayochet. Men's activism initiative to redeem the historical drama in the foundation of the others. The yochid, the individual, was called upon from time to time to participate in the emergence and development of the Knesset Israel. In order to participate in the historical drama, one must possess two capabilities. First, to be always ready for action. Second, when action is called for, to act effectively. Dreya Netuyo is an outstretched arm, symbolizes the state of vigilance and watchfulness. Vigilance actually can be broken down into two component parts. First of all, total involvement. Who is vigilant? Who is vigilant? Who is watchful? Watchful is the mother when our baby is sick. But the stranger is not the watchful. In order to be watchful, to be vigilant, one must be completely dedicated. Totally dedicated. Partial commitment does not result in steady concern and in steady worry. These are the two cornerstones of vigilance. The state of mind which motivates man to be watchful, alert, and keen. Where we have a case in Tanakh of someone being vigilant, watchful. This is the ideal, is the Tanakh, is the Bible on it portrays such a person. It means he is personified, vigilant at his best. Who is it? Who was it? Who? Mordechai was alert, on the guard, as soon as Esther was taken away from him, to the royal palace. Do you know why? Why was Mordechai? What's the question? Why was Mordechai so well? Because he was there. He was devoted to her, and he was unreservedly committed to her, in the form of Mordechai relevant. He was father or mother, he's at the same time a vigilant father or mother. But children sometimes, they don't worry about their father or their mother, so they're not always vigilant. God against Israel is only the person who is committed totally and unconditionally. You cannot be alert, you cannot alert an individual to danger unless he is concerned. He's concerned. Basically, what we need now, the Jewish community, the Orthodox community in general, not only the Jewish community in general, because they have to swear, of course, but it's for the Orthodox community in particular, these are clearly in preservation of Yahweh, preservation of Israel throughout the United States. It is vigilance, but vigilance is a function of total concern. Whether it is not is not concerned properly, is not vigilant. And whoever is not vigilant will always miss the opportunity. He will come in a bit late. He will not act at the opportune moment. It's number one. Number two, it is not enough to be vigilant, means not only to be concerned or something else. It's not enough to be attentive. One must possess historical intuition, sensitivity to events, a sense of discrimination between peripheral and central occurrences. Some people can discriminate, but then a marginal event is very important, and a central event they don't see. We need sometimes at least a spark of the clairvoyance of the prophet, in order to know when to intervene and when to wait. Again, I have to refer to Mordechai. Mordechai was not only concerned, and that was the reason for his being vigilant and attentive and alert. Mordechai had that sensitivity to his faith. He felt the heartbeat, the rhythm, as he was talking. Drama. And he knew what the excellent artist. Mordechai possessed the prescience and the foresight indispensable for crucial decisions. Esther thought, what was the contrast between him and Esther? It was a contrast. The messages were flying back and forth between Esther and Mordechai. By carrying by a talk, you are so woman and no. So you shall never from the units of the king, family, whoever persons in Esther and prosecute the mission after fleeing Mordechai. Yes. What was the controversy between Mordechai and Esther? They disagreed about that. To such an extent that Mordechai sent her the family warning. Mahesh Tachishi by Isaveis, Mirea by Isaveis, the God of all. What was the crux of the conference? Esther thought that her intervention should be delayed. What did she mean? She explained her opinion. She explained her opinion. She said, very well, she has not been summoned to appear before the king. There is a law in the statute books of Persia and Moran that whoever appears in a courtyard and in without receiving invitation of the kingdom should be executed. I mean, so she was appear before a king, she might be executed. And she didn't care so much for her life. But then, what will the poor Mordechai do? What will the Jews do? There will be no one to intervene, but to intercede on behalf of the people who are condemned to death. So she advised Mordechai that it would be rather advisable to honor him. Yes, he did it, that explanation was just issued. The explanation was erased for almost a year. They did it to have issued before Pesach. And the extermination of the Jews was supposed to take place when? On the 13th, right? On the 13th of Adar. So there are almost 11 months to share certain, she advised him, and wisely advised him. Why is that now? Why are you to the king? So there's a question of whether she will succeed to him. She might be killed if the portal approaches. So let her do an election for another month. Then, over such a period of time, she'll settle with the civilization, make your talim, it should be secure for shearing talim. And what happened without explaining why is opposed, sometimes in the message, the warning, and Mordechai insisted that instant action without delay, be patient. And of course, he was right. That he was right, that's the proof, that he didn't know me. Yes, Mordechai was the first security. Sometimes he won't tell to him, to his enemies. And he knows that the rest of the act now cannot explain this to me. Why? Many times, in the sense, and I want you to understand, it's easy to explain to rationalize secondary, mounting our decisions. Yes. Why did you buy this car? Why did you buy this car? And I don't know the reasons, but so you can rationalize. So if one will ask you, why do you love this person? Why are you committed to this ideal? Why do you sacrifice your life for self-defense? You cannot rationalize, you cannot explain. Central decision, crucial decision, decision to exist, which is trying to destiny of human beings. And sometimes the destiny of the people, the destiny of the community, can never be explained. I feel as though offering intuitive certain life from God for me, and I see the roads along which I have traveled. I cannot explain, I have no compass. I'll just go to the dark, but I'm sure that I'll get to the objective, to my destination. I'm sure. If I'm close to a car, rationally, I can. This is basically it. And the person, Yisra Shira says, Shubi Ashulamish, Shubi the Nechasevah. So the member says, Eilim Le'eloho, Umisayimom, the Knesset Yisroel, the Gentile peoples address themselves to the community of Yisroel, the Knesset Yisroel, Shubi Ashulamish, come back to us. Why such dedication? Why such commitment? Why so many sacrifices? Why so much torture and misery and agony? For drama, who left me in exile with this attitude, who the trigger came to his transcendental hiding, abode, why the Nazis, and you are going to Duxin, princess, and ruler. So, Father Solanus, who might be you? Even we need that as well. In all the victories, it's more convenient and more comfortable to be a boy. Why be a Jew? Why? Shoot me, son. Not your madness, your bad love. Your anonymous dedication. Your unlimited commitment. Or what? So what is your answer? What can I tell you? I'm just involved in the dance between two camels. I cannot free myself from the dance. You know why being Jew? Because one cannot be a non-Jew. He has to be a Jew. There's no answer to that. It's an eternal commitment. It's a commitment which is a part of my higher values. It's a part of my own existence. Can I explain my own existence? Who I am? Why I want to live? Why I want? I am afraid of death. My relationship to my children. My relationship to my parents. Can I explain my basic experience? I cannot explain. That's why I cannot explain the experience of being a Jew. It's a basic experience. It is the central experience. A central experience cannot be rationalized, nor can it be explained and expounded in words. You ask me, why did Mordechai tell Esther? Why did he ignore his logical argument? He felt like doing that. He didn't explain it. But he felt now is the time. In week from now, in month from now, this is it. This is the incredible sensitivity. Now, Tehazu Vashalam, in intelligence on which no one can sleep. Yes, to those who continue to be until by the end of the year, the shame which we have. This is vision. And same and the start of the scripture. Now, of course, when we are still in Darim, we might feel it effectively. Half measures which do not produce results should not be undertaken at all. That was the way the Jews already had it. They knew how, and then they went as well. When they did it, they acted effectively. Now I will conclude the evil, I feel the love of suffering, the love of the vain, the love of sin, the love of Yidin Satero, me throwing on the shatter the sea of the shrine, for another Meshaper, the Tiyas Metraim, are the Meshuvah. But I feel for one of the Hachamim, for one of the Zayim, for one of those, we have said so many times, the subject to two interpretations. One interpretation will use the subjunctive, the other interpretation will use the indicative, the grammatical indicative. One interpretation will say, but will interpret, or rather translate, that you will prolong the Chachamim, even if we were, if all of us, were wise, if prolong the vein, even if all of us, if everybody were the subjunctive, I mean, intelligent, prolong the vein, even if everyone well, a scholar, so far, it would be to the bound to tell the story of the mind, the subjunctive. But actually, the human text, of course, the human text is very hard to know. The indicative is subjunctive many times in the field. I feel the same. We use the same vocabulary. But it's quite tempting to interpret that in the Colonel Hathorne and Colonel Evangelist, Colonel Spain, in the indicative. Even though we are, where even though we are Chachamim, we are Levinim, we are Zakenim, we are bound, duty bound, to tell the story of the time. Which interpretation do you like to choose on it? Then you can exercise an option. Which one would you like to prefer? The subjunctive or the indicative? When you say, I can't do it. The right one?
Yes,
the right one. The right one is that we are not speaking about something doubtful hypothetically, but we are speaking about something real. Remember that, of course, if it is subjunctive, so you don't understand why it is necessary to say. It's just subjunctive, we were, and actually indeed we are not, so why is it necessary to say that we are bound to tell the story of this right? If we mean it in a genuine sense, that we are, even though we are scholars, we are wise, we are learned, we are familiar with the laws, nevertheless we are bound to tell the story of this right, then it makes sense. But all the question is, if it's used in the indicative form, does it make a bit of sense? Of pride, vain glory, how can a Jew say of himself, of him, for one of our coming, for one of the gaining, for one of the for one of the living, for there? It's a lie. That's exactly what I want just to comment on that. If the second chapter, the following is that of the indicative, not in subjunctive. As I said before, I believe that the indicative form is applicable as well as the subjunctive. Since you see as the prior, is identical with the limud, as I said before. This study, this discourse, this medrash. We do not read the sections in Exodus. The best proof is that we do not read the sections in Exodus. During the Yetzias Mitzrayim, but we interpret the section in Zohar, and how many of it, the things, the few events that occur in Mitzrayim, and so it means we just study the meaning of certain words, but we don't tell a complete tale. The tale is far from being complete when we present it in Agora. If we really want it, if we want us to tell a complete tale, covering all angles, there was only one way. To start with the finishment is where going to climb up, read through wherever and pay, and finish there. And if we want to tell the story of Christianity, so we have to read half of the Shema until I'm near the Shema itself. But we don't do that. What we mentioned about the Christmas language are just the highlights. And we are interested not so much in the event as in the interpretation of the words of Agamei Vidoi. As the Rambam called it, the Mishnah says, Videre Shapar Shatuma, and the Rambam called it Medrash. Simply, we learn, we investigate, we explore, we discuss. It signifies exploration, investigation, analysis, etc. And as I have explained many times, I don't know whether I did it here or not, but real carefully, basically CPUT and Mitzrayim cannot be separated from Talmud Erech. CPUT and Mitzrayim, as far as the gist of the mitzvah is concerned, is inseparably linked up with Talmud Erech. It's simply to study Torah, either Halachot or the story of CPUT and Mitzrayim on the night, on the 15th night in Israel. Basically, the mitzvah is Talmud Erech. Since the Torah has prepared Hashidus, has prepared Chumet to the questions of the four sons, yes, including the Dao and the 71, it is obvious that what did the Torah want? What is obvious? The Torah has prepared Chumet. To be given the four sons, beginning with the scholarly son, the wicked son, the dull son, and the incest, they don't require at all. And as I explained it in Maria last night, it's four different truths in the however, there is a common denominator in all of this. What is the common denominator? To tell you the other trial is to teach yourself. Teach him about the tribe, teach him about the laws pertaining to Pesach, but to tell the Tabitha living for me is the Limadha for living. If you die to Shodan, all is the one day. It's Talmud Erech. It is obvious that everyone, no matter how ignorant, no matter how alienated, has a share in the family. Every Jew is endowed with the potential, basically, every Jew is endowed with the potential to understand, to comprehend, and to digest. I say it once. We know a little more about Rabbi Simoy, who said that the embryo, while in the womb of the mother, is taught by an angel, taught tailored by an angel, and then he is about to depart, so the Malach slaps him on his face, and forget it there. So the question is obvious to you. No, by teaching us what the money says, you should forget. The money says, either or. If you don't want him to know, don't teach him. If you taught him, why should he forget? The answer is, why you should forget? It is a very serious question. Why you should forget? The answer is simple. Theory can not be acquired through the gear, through work, through dedication, through there is not a gift which is just granted. It's not a ready-made suit which one just walks into the stone and drops. Without idea, there's no chance. Back to my question of life, if without idea, there's no acquisition of merit, so why teach him? In order that the Talmud Erech media should just be reminiscent. Remember, you know, Plato said that all learning is just remembrance. Вы свои термины, что я знаю. Вайсы, термины is not something new. The Jew is not something strange to the Jew. Something new. When you approach a child, you begin to teach him how to say, Simon Dalla, the way he's brought a Jewish man's heart, he sees something new to him. He knew it once upon a time. You begin to remind him. You know, sometimes we forget an event. And sometimes, and we are reminded by someone. And little by little, we are beginning to reproduce. Paranormal is reproduction by the memory. Why should it be reproduction by the memory and not comprehension? For a simple reason. Because it's not alien. Since I knew it once, it's not alien to me anymore. I have this attention. Of course, it's latent in me, but I can reproduce it. So it means every Jew can be a great scholar. Every Jew can be a hawker. Every Jew can attain below, every Jew can attain God. The potential of spirit is present in the Jew. And every, whoever, even one has failed to take advantage, to realize the gift that God bestowed upon him, everyone is entitled to a share in the Torah, to the intuitive perceptibility of Torah verities. Then values, everyone is able to comprehend a Torah thought. It's explained and expounded by a good teacher, and everyone knows, more or less, to implement Torah law, no matter how often he has to consult the Rebbe or the Rebbe. Torah is not the possession of a few. Torah is the possession of the entire Knesset Yisrael, the entire congregation. If there has ever been a democratic philosophy of freedom, of education, if there has ever been an exoteric philosophy of education, it is our philosophy of education. Think education in Greece was esoteric. The Plato Academy did not admit everybody. They just admitted a few. During the Middle Ages, education and knowledge was controlled, you know, by the order, by the monastic orders. I mean, in England, I mean, knowledge universities, the oldest universities, Oxford, Cambridge, we are controlled by a few who are accessible just to the aristocracy. In fact, I mean, now people begin to realize that everybody has his entitlement to education. It's a question of helping those who cannot attain it by themselves. Our system of education was democratic from its very beginning. Democratic. Exoteric. Whoever wants to study, whoever wants admission, I mean, it was not easy, was provided to the opportunity, given the opportunity to study. Why did we develop such a democratic approach to him, to the dissemination of Torah knowledge, to providing everybody with the opportunity of studying and acquiring knowledge? Why? Because the Torah is not something which is outside of the Jew, but which resides in the Jew. Sometimes it is conscious of it, sometimes it is unconscious. But in deep recesses of his self-knowledge, in the knowledge of Torah, there is the intuition of Torah, and there is the sensitivity to Torah things. Pesach night, and that is symbolized by the Seder. Pesach night, with the restaging and the reenacting of the drama of Exodus, at which every Jew beheld Gimel Shinah. Pesach night, something happened which we are unaware of. Not only the Jews left Mitzrayim, but Pesach night, the Jews were confronted by the Shinah. In the name of God, was the Jewish Shinah. Who are accustomed to say that Gimel Shinah was a public spectacle as a direct sin? They came in a way, fine. But the way they are going to tell us, the same drama was staged. And think of now, in the male body of the Jewish image, that means everyone suddenly, for 1 minute or 1 hour, because it's not how long, was wise and clever and intelligent and sensitive and showed the presence of God. Otherwise, it would be no exception. I told him, I need to say, you know, I'm sure I can. We made a budget, and for 1 hour or two, he was initiated into the greatest of all history. He was considered a Chacham Novi Balbeir. The mission was granted that night to all of us to address ourselves as Chachamim in the reigning state. And those Jews who left the time now confronted this HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So is each Jew, every Seder table confronted with the issue. And you're right, no matter how evil he is, the point